जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर दारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर दारी, यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, जमुना तीरा वनचारी, यमुना तीर वनचारे, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, so we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 13, which is entitled The Appearance of Lord Varaha. And we're reading verses 6 and 7. I'll read verse 6, the Sanskrit and translation, and then we'll all read together verse 7, because that has Prabhupada's purport. You can also join me with text 6, but we'll just chant it once through. Maitreya uvacha yada yadasva bharyaya sardam jatasvayambhuva manu pranjali pranatascedam vedagarbam abhashata. The translation. The sage Maitreya said to Vidura, after his appearance, Manu, the father of mankind, along with his wife, thus addressed the reservoir of Vedic wisdom, Brahma, with obeisances and folded hands. Text 7, we'll read together. Tvam eka sarva bhutanam. Ina prajanam te shushushakena vabhavet tvam eka sarvabhutanam janma krit vrittita pita tatapi na prajanam te Sushusha kena va bhavet. Tvameka sarva bhutanam. Janma krit vritta pita. Tathapi na prajanam te. Shushusha kena va bhavet. Shushushakena vabhavet. Tvameka sarva bhutanam. Janma krit viridita pita. Tathapi na prajanam te. Shushusha kena bhavet. Tvam. You. Ekaha. One. Sarva, all, bhutanam, living entities, janmakrit, progenitor, vrittidaha, source of subsistence, pita, the father, tata, api, yet, naha, ourselves, prajanam, of all who are born, te, of you, shushusha, service, kena, how, va, either, bhavet, may be possible. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yeah. This is Svayam Bhuva Manu speaking. You are the father of all living entities and the source of their subsistence because they are all born of you. Please order us how we may be able to render service unto you. Purport. A son's duty is not only to make the father the source of supply for all of his needs, but also, when he is grown up, to render service unto him. That is the law of creation, beginning from the time of Brahma. A father's duty is to bring up the son until he is grown, and when the son is grown up, it is his duty to render service unto the father. Omagyan timarandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhistam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yuta padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinobandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So big for the blessings of the assembled devotees. May our words and our consciousness be aligned with Guru Parampara. May Shishi Radha Shyam Sundar be pleased. May all the devotees be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together. Hare Krishna. So this is Canto 3, Chapter 13, entitled The Appearance of Lord Varaha, Texts 6 and 7. We'll read them both. The sage Maitreya said to Vidura, After his appearance, Manu, the father of mankind, along with his wife, thus addressed the reservoir of Vedic wisdom, Brahma, with obeisances and folded hands. You are the father of all living entities and the source of their subsistence. Because they are all born of you, please order us how we may be able to render service unto you. So this is Maitreya Rishi continuing his teachings to Vidura. Dashabhi Lakshanai Yuktam Puranam. The Mahapuranas have 10 subjects. And the first subject is Sarga, the creation coming from Mahavishnu. It's the first subject of the Bhagavatam. Sometimes also called the elemental creation. And then the second topic, which is where we are now, is Visarga, the secondary creation coming from Lord Brahma. And actually, when Maitreya Rishi introduces this section, he says, Veda Garbo Atta. Now we will speak about the creation of Veda Garbo, which is Lord Brahma. Veda Garbo. Atta. Atta means now, but in the Vedic literature, it is actually a sacred word to say Atta. If you start any particular teaching on any subject, you can begin with Atta. So it means now, but it actually is said to, when the speaker speaks Atta before presenting something, he clears away any obstacles in the presentation. And also those who hear it by the sound Atta, they're also clearing any obstacles in hearing it properly. So you have many Vedic literatures, you know, the Vedanta Sutra. Atato Brahma Jigyasya, that's how it begins, the first verse, Atta. And also in the Mimamsa school, their main book begins, Atato Dharma Jigyasya. Now, you can inquire into what is Dharma. And the Vedanta, of course, is now you inquire. Now, after you've graduated from understanding Dharma, now you can inquire into what is spirit. Atato Brahma Jigyasya. Even the Yoga Sutras begins with Atta. Atta Yoga Anushasanam. So Maitreya Rishi also, he says, Veda Garbo Atta. And Veda Garbo He's the reservoir. Lord Brahma is the reservoir of the Veda. Because Prabhupada describes Mahavishnu, when he breathes out, when you breathe out, it makes a little sound, right? A little breath. So when Mahavishnu breathes out, also the sound, that is the eternal Veda that becomes manifest. And it's said that Lord Brahma inhales that breath. He inhales it. And then he becomes the reservoir of the Vedas. Even in, you know, the Yoga Sutra, as I was saying, begins with Atta Yoga Anushasanam. So Patanjali there, he's saying he's not the creator of the system of yoga. He's systematizing it, but he didn't create it. Therefore, Anushasana means now I'm going to present yoga, the teachings of yoga, which is coming down one follower after the other follower, and I'm just going to now present, I'm going to systematize it. So the commentator, who is Vyas, he says, who is the original source of the Yoga Sutra, the true teaching of yoga? Hiranyagarbha Brahma. Lord Brahma is also recognized to be the source of yoga, the teachings of yoga. So here also we're hearing about, he's sometimes called Hiranyagarbha, Vedagarbha, Brahma. There are two Brahmas. There's a kind of a cosmic Brahma, Hiranyagarbha Brahma. He's gigantic form. The living entities at some point merge into him even. He's like it's like a cosmic form. And then there's the Brahma who actually comes also to this material world sometimes. There are certain pastimes, so he interacts with people. That's Vairaja Brahma. So sometimes we hear Brahma, but there are different, just like Shiva. It's a little confusing sometimes. You know, which Shiva? Sadashiva. Rudra. So it's the same being, but there appears to be different manifestations on different levels also simultaneously. Just like Krishna, right? There's Krishna in Vrindavan, and there's Lord Narayan. Was also Krishna, but a different manifestation. So, Vedagarbha Atta. Now, interesting, when Lord Brahma begins the creation, Visarga, the first thing he does is he creates five conditions for the living beings who are about to appear. He's about to create their bodies. But first, the conditions by which they will be subject to. And what is the first condition? Anyone remember? Some chapter back, a couple of chapters back. The first thing he creates is tamaha. A darkness and ignorance that covers the true nature of the beings who are about to be there. The atma, self-forgetfulness, Prabhupada says. That every living being now born, who's about to be born, will be in a state of self-forgetfulness. That is the first thing created, coming from Brahma. So that's why there's a verse, no matter how intelligent we are, how sincere we are, it really doesn't matter. You cannot discover your own true nature on your own because you're in a state of self-forgetfulness. So there's a verse, Anadi Avidya. Avidya, ignorance, is happening since time immemorial. Atma vedanam svato na sambhavet anyas. So this says that anadi avidya yukta, yuktasya, that we are joined to this beginningless ignorance. And atma vedanam, knowledge of the atma, svato, on your own, na sambhavat, cannot occur. You cannot have knowledge of your atma on your own. Anyas, it must come from another who has it. The people sometimes question, well, why do you need a guru? Is it really necessary? Some religions, not at all. They don't, well, in a sense, they do have their gurus, but from long, long ago, they also can recognize if it wasn't for this person, like Jesus, or Muhammad, or Buddha. If it wasn't for this person, we would be lost. So this verse also in the 11th canto is clearly saying that on your own, to try to understand the Atma and realize the Atma, anyas, it must come from another person who's tattvavit, who actually knows and sees the truth. So he creates these five conditions, Lord Brahma. Another one is fear of death, because as soon as you forget that you're the eternal soul, then naturally you are in a state of fear. Because you think you're this, and this is dying. We see right before our eyes, these bodies are deteriorating, our minds also. So great fear is a condition that we're born into. And then we misidentify also with this body-mind system. That's another condition. So these different conditions are given there. So actually, when Brahma creates these five conditions, he feels heavy. You know, he's starting the creation, Lord Brahma, in his service to the Lord, Garbhadakashai Vishnu, he begins a service, and then he creates these very heavy conditioning before anyone even appears. So he feels very heavy and disheartened. And therefore it's described, Bhagavat Dhyana Putena. Then he purifies his mind by meditating on Bhagavan. And then from that purified state, what comes next? The four Kumaras. Now, you started with ignorance, but now from a purified state, now is coming knowledge. The four Kumaras, because they are Shaktyavesh avatars of the Lord's Jnana Shakti. Shaktyavesh avatars represent usually one opulence, one particular opulence of the Lord. So the four Kumaras are representing and manifesting transcendental knowledge. So many things come from Brahma in this secondary creation. And finally, we come to this section where what comes now from Brahma is the father and the mother of mankind, us. Who is our father and our mother? Svayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa. Yeah, Prabhupada says, actually there's a verse in the Bhagavatam, Strinam, referring to Shatarupa, Strinam Adya, she is the original woman. And Svayambhuva Manu is the original man. Because the other beings that came before this, there was many other beings, but they're on a higher level. They're in different planetary systems, not exactly the, you know, mankind yet. But mankind begins, the father and mother, is Svayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa. You know, there are, in Brahma's one day, he has one day, very, very long time, and 14 Manus come and go in succession, one after the other. That's called Manvantara. The duration of their reign is called Manvantara. So the first one to come from his day, Lord Brahma, is Svayambhuva Manu, and he is the source of the Manu Samhita. He's also the teacher, the father, the leader of mankind. So this is where we are in the Bhagavatam. He just appears with his wife. And he gives the law book of mankind, Manu Samhita, but also by his example. If you look at all of his relationships, they're so ideal. So he's not just teaching words, you know. He's giving mostly dharma, occupational duties. What is the duty of a man? What is the duty of a woman? What is the duty of a vaishya? What is the duty of a brahmana? These things are coming from the teachings of Manu, Svayambhuva Manu. So he's not only just giving these teachings, but in his life, he's Mahajana. Mahajana yena gata sapanta. We're meant to follow the Mahajans, 12 of them. He is one of them, Manu. So he's not just giving dharma, but he's a pure devotee. And by his example, he's teaching so the perfection of relationships, all of his relationships, right? He was a father. Anyone remember any of his children? 5 children. Uttanapad, huh? Priyavrata, yes. Devahuti, yes. Very good. Yes, so he was such a good father. You know, like when he was, I was thinking when he was giving his daughter Devahuti's hand in marriage to Kardamuni. It was such a beautiful exchange, so respectful between them. And he had tears in his eyes giving away his daughter, but he also thought, even though this person was a renowned sage, Kardamuni, he thought, this is the proper person to give my daughter to. So with a heart full of love and tears, he gave permission. Kardamuni, you now take my daughter, I trust you. And then Devahuti, what kind of daughter was she that she grew up in such luxury? Her father was Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, with such power and authority and position, and but she just was so humble also that she just humbly served Kardamuni with no complaint or anything, just gave herself completely. So that also shows the father, right? The glory of the father. He was very glorious, very good father, very good husband. You see, whenever he's spoken of, his wife is always right there. Different yajnas he performed, different things he did, activities, his wife, Shatarupa, always there, very respectful. Very good father. Very good grandfather. Who was he the grandfather of? Well, Uttanapad, so he was the grandfather of Dhruva. He was the grandfather of Kapiladev, the incarnation. Right. Like, you remember when Dhruva, his brother, Dhruva's brother was killed. So Dhruva was king, so it was also his duty to now go and kill that person who killed his brother unnecessarily. So he went to kill that yaksha in the Himalayas. But then many yakshas appeared. Well, if you're being attacked, that's also your duty to kill, to defend yourself. So that's still okay. But then Dhruva, he kind of got carried away a little bit. And just seeing yakshas everywhere, just started destroying all of them. And he was taking it a little too far. And so who appeared to help him and to guide him was Swayambhuva Manu, his grandfather. He said, Dhruva, it is certainly the duty of a king when there's some killing that they can also kill. But now it's going. You're going a little too far. Remember who you are. Remember, you're a pure devotee of the Lord. So again, let go of this. You know, what is it that causes a person to go a little too far? You ever have this experience? You have some plan to speak to somebody in a very clear way. Maybe something happened that was wrong to you and you want to bring it up. I'm going to share what happened, and you have an idea of being very just and objective. But then you go to the person and there's some, the ego starts, the false ego starts to manifest, and then it gets very personal. And then we can act with anger, we can say the wrong thing, and then that also, of course, provokes the other false ego, and there becomes a battle. So the ahankar is the cause of taking things too personally. So Dhruva, of course, this is teaching us, really. But as soon as, what does ahankar mean? Aham means I am. Kara, I am the cause, I am the doer. If you really see that only you are the doer, then when you look at anybody else, you also think that they also are the doer, and therefore they are to blame. I do something, I achieve something, I take the credit. Also, somebody does something wrong, they should be chastised, punished, whatever it may be. But it's the vision of seeing that I'm doing things, I'm responsible, you're responsible, and not seeing the full picture, you know? So when Swayambhuva Manu comes to Dhruva, he says the yakshas didn't kill your brother. He gives a very transcendental view of things. He says, Daivam hi karanam. The cause is daivam. Meaning by that as actually the material energy. Daivi hi esha guna mai. You know, it's daivam. It's divine also. But it's kind of a spell that all living beings are under. Just like we spoke in the beginning about Brahma. This, the first condition is a state of forgetfulness. That's the cause. not this person. So Dhruva, you've lost a little touch with that. So now again, completely surrender yourself to the Supreme Lord. This is Svayambhuva Manu as a grandfather coming to Dhruva and giving him this transcendental knowledge. You know, and there's a term in Sanskrit, vyavahar. So on our level, you know, somebody does something wrong, you have to do something about it. But you shouldn't lose sight also of this higher vision of what's actually happening. We're all hurting each other and making mistakes. Sometimes you're the recipient of that, sometimes you're the one who does it. And the reason why it's all happening is because every living being is in a state of forgetfulness. Daiva, karanam, that is the cause. Ignorance, a fundamental ignorance. It's like if a group of people went to a magician, you know, you go to some magician. Actually, the word maya is connected to the word magic also. Magic, maya, put under a spell. You go to some hypnotist and you tell them, a group of people say, okay, we want to come out of this reality that we're in. Please put us under hypnosis. And I want to be a doctor and I want to do this and these are my friends and these are my enemies. And then the magician, abracadabra, abracadabra means something. It means that whatever I speak now will be created, will happen. This term abracadabra, magicians used to say abracadabra. And now whatever is spoken will be reality for you. They have that power to influence a person's mind. So anyway, the magician puts everybody, the hypnotist puts everybody under hypnosis. And then they just start imagining, I am this, I am that, I'm your father, I'm your brother, I'm your enemy, I'm your friend. And so from their point of view, that's where all the action is. That's where this person did this, this person did that. But from the point of view of the hypnotist, he realizes the cause of all of this is that I put you under this spell because you wanted it. This is something like the picture of our situation. This is the real cause. When you become dedicated to the process of lifting that fundamental ignorance, fear is gone. You realize you're an eternal soul. You're a servant of God. But you cannot do that on your own. We need help. Those who are there already in that state of consciousness can guide us, can help us. So do the needful on this material level. Someone may be to blame and something has to be done about it. But don't lose sight of the true picture of what's happening. And then you'll actually feel a little compassion for the person rather than just personal anger from the false ego. False ego sees something very small. You see, it's very narrow for the false ego. There's you and me, and you did this to me. But if our consciousness broadens, widens, then we can accommodate some of these teachings of the Bhagavatam. So, Svayambhuva Manu says, the yaksha didn't kill your brother. That sounds crazy. He did, right? But he's seeing differently. Daivam, he, certainly daivam. It is daivam, karanam, that is the cause. And then Dhruva hears that, surrenders. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur also used to have this saying that he would say often, agyata hi doshi. Agyata hi doshi. Doshi means a fault. Who is at fault? Agyata. Ignorance is at fault. Not that person that you're pointing out, but ignorance. So same teaching. So Manu, as father, as husband, as grandfather, as leader and king, he was such an amazing. It's said that the threefold miseries could not exist in his when he was ruling. And there's some description later in the Bhagavatam of how he ruled his reigns, Svayambhuva Manu. His family, they would wake up in the morning. How would they wake up? You know, we have our alarm clocks. So he's a king. So sometimes kings, they have musicians, hired musicians and singers and things like that in their kingdom. So the glories of the Lord were being sung in the mornings to wake up the family. This is in one purport later in the Bhagavatam. And he would do his duties perfectly. He's like personification of Dharma. And he'd engage his family in all kinds of worship and service of the Lord. And then at the end of the day, they would all hear Hari Katha together, the family. And then it said that even in his dreams, he would have transcendental dreams. You know, if you begin to have Krishna conscious dreams, it's a very good sign, because usually bhakti is buddhi purvakam. It's directed by your intelligence. We may not have a natural inclination to think of Krishna throughout the day, but the buddhi purvakam, I'm going to use my intelligence, I should think of Krishna. Now, but when you go to sleep at night and you dream, you lose the ability to use your intelligence. So it just becomes spontaneous, whatever is kind of happening in a little bit deeper levels. So if you're beginning to dream of Krishna and dream of devotees and things like this, it's very good, because it's showing that even without your directing intelligence, it's something's got in very deep and it's coming out in your dream, because your intelligence shuts down when you dream, right? It's just almost like the emotional life just takes over. And that's why we have wild and crazy and strange dreams, because you could say it's like subconscious things coming up to the surface, and there's all kinds of crazy things in there. But if it becomes Krishna and Krishna's devotees, and Prabhupada said he used to dream of taking prasadam. Yeah, so, but anyway, Svayambhuva Manu would have dreams like this, very spiritual dreams, because it's gotten so deep inside of you that on all levels you are Krishna conscious. We need the buddhi, this intelligence, to say, oh, my mind is going away from Krishna, let me bring it back. Let me read this Srimad Bhagavatam. Let me chant the holy name. That's directing, that's using your intelligence to engage the mind in service, so that the mind begins to get purified. Eventually, if the energy, bhakti, shakti, is allowed into us, then all the vehicles, we have many vehicles, not just the physical body. We have the pranamoy, the vital body, the pran body. Then you have the mental body. Then you have the intellectual body. So you have many. And so if bhakti comes into us, then gradually it pervades everything, takes over everything, takes over your pran, and therefore your service, because you use your life, you need your life energy, pran govinda prabhu, right? Pran is the life of a person, govinda, is Lord Govinda. So the pran, once it actually receives the energy of bhakti, then you're moved by bhakti, no longer by yourself, your false ego. Right now, the false ego is pushing and moving, making decisions, doing different things, doing what I want, moved by desires. But one is also, a pure devotee is actually moved by the shakti of bhakti. It takes over their pran. It takes over their mind. And they happily submit and consent to that. And in this way, they're spontaneously engaged in service, no longer forcing ourselves, struggling. So, yeah, this is the beautiful character of Svayambhuva Manu. And what this section is about, so we talked about him as father, husband, grandfather, king. This is about him as the son to Lord Brahma. In fact, Svayambhuva means son of Svayambhu, Lord Brahma. Another name for Lord Brahma. So he is the Manu coming, the son of Svayambhu, Lord Brahma. And, you know, I was looking a little ahead, and this is a nice small section of father-son relationship. And Prabhupada says in the purport, I think it's coming up in two verses, but he starts the purport by saying, The relationship between the Father and the Son is always sublime. I thought that was very interesting. It's always sublime. Material or spiritual, whatever you may, it's always sublime because, why do you think that might be? Why would the relationship between Father and Son be sublime, using that word? Anyone have an idea? Sublime? Nice. Yeah, sublime is an interesting word. There's something deep there too, right? Sublime. Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna, right? Your life will become sublime. Anyone else have a thought? Father-son relationship, why is it always sublime? Sorry? Well, it's also a reflection on a smaller scale of our relationship with God. You think the Father, on a small scale, is doing what we can say, when we say God, I mean maybe something more like Mahavishnu, who's providing everything, who's the source. Everything is coming from him. Guidance, everything is arranged for the Son. It's on a small scale, it's the relationship. Right? God is the Supreme Father. We are the children. That is also one view of things. And also, when a child is born, the relationship with the Father. Now think about this. This is for the child, their first encounter with authority is the mother and father. And later they may learn that the highest authority is God. So it's not surprising if they now project their experiences of the father and mother onto their ideas of God. Right? This relationship, parent and children, is very deep. You know, and it's actually arranged by Krishna that if it's the right mood, good parents, the spiritual consciousness with good guidance and direction, this is setting them up for the relationship with God in the best possible way. And also the relationship with Guru. Because it's we're talking about authorities here, right? This is a major issue for many people, their relationship to authority. And for a little baby, that's it. God for that little baby is mom and dad, right? My creators. You're with me every day. You're directing. You have to have a nice balance of affection and love, but also discipline. Right? You see, Vishnu, he has the lotus flower and the conch shell for blessings, but he also has the club and the disc for some discipline. That is Vishnu. That is God, the Supreme Father. So the mother-father combination is also meant to represent these things in a smaller scale to prepare children for the relationship with Guru and then the relationship with Bhagavan himself, the Supreme Father. So it's a very deep thing, you know. We see that parents, you know, if they are overly stern and strong and heavy and cold, then this gets into the child, right? And this can also cause later in life, if those parents are religious, it can cause them to turn away from religion, for one thing. But it also can have them, it causes them to have a conception of God as very fearful. I work with somebody who tells me when she drives by a church, you know those like old wooden white churches with a cross? When she drives by one of those churches, she feels terrified in her heart, because she remembers her childhood with her religious parents who were very, very heavy and were forcing things on her. And so she actually feels it in her body when she passes by a church, right? From the parents. Now we know it's not just that. Right. This is also the children are also souls coming from their own histories there and all of these things. But this is still an arrangement by Krishna that the parents feel this sense of responsibility. So overly stern, hostile parents can also cause that, that now this is what I think of God. So why have anything to do with God? And then if your parents are too, are afraid to discipline, they're pampering, so much pampering, give anything you want. Then that person, often their conception of God is that I can kind of get away with anything. God's so loving, he's so forgiving, he forgives everything, you know. And they can lose a sense of responsibility, or they think God will take care of it for me. God, do this for me. So we may not think this is happening. We think, no, I'm an adult now. I have my own concepts of God. All that's been changed, however my parents were. But the real question is, you may have conscious concepts of God that you think have changed you, but then what's your emotional reaction to authority? That's really the proof. I may think that I've replaced those experiences with the parents with good ideas of God. But how deep have they gone in? And when you come before authority, what do you feel? That can really be the proof of what you believe. Belief is a deep thing. You know, you ask somebody, what do you believe? Oh, I believe, yes, there's a God, and he's like this. And he's it's not very deep. Oh, I believe there's no God. That's also not very deep. You know, people just have ideas in their brains that are just swirling around. They picked it up somewhere and they say, this is what I believe. I believe in Buddhism. Okay. I believe in this. I am a Christian. But I actually think this is God. I disagree with this part of the Bible. And it's people just, their minds. What do you really believe? You know, do you really believe in Krishna? You know, that word is loaded. Is very profound. So I believe God is like this, like that. But then I come before someone who's like an authority, and then I feel this repulsion. And God's the ultimate authority. It's going to be hard to separate, you know, because it's just authority. He's the supreme being, the controller of everything, the supreme master, and you are the servant. You know, if we have some background experience of growing up where all this gets very twisted and painful and heavy, then this can be an obstacle in our relationship with God. Now, certainly, by the power of a pure devotee, of transcendental knowledge, of all of these bhakti samskars that we're getting, it can overpower this conditioning. If we take deep, deep shelter of it, if we take deep shelter, it can overcome all of these things. But we shouldn't then think that those things are also nothing to influence us, the parental relationship. How important, how big. Rishabhdev says, right? Don't become a mother. Don't become a father. Pita nasasyat, janani nasasyat. Don't become a mother or father if you're not able to deliver your dependents. Now, it doesn't mean that the mother and father actually delivers them. But at least, because who is the real deliverer? Mukunda. The one who gives liberation is God himself. And the pure devotee can also do it. Right? So it's not expected that the mother or father will be the actual deliverer. But they at least have to create a situation, an environment, where that is possible. That's a better way of seeing it. You're not going to do everything. You're not going to. Just like with Dhruva, his mother, Suniti. Suniti. Niti means like ethics or good character. Suniti. She had good character. So when Dhruva was so angry and he had such a strong desire, she said, I don't know what to do. I can't help you. But I've heard that great personalities, they go to the forest, and by turning to God, they get all their desires fulfilled. She had that faith. That's a mother with real deep faith to send her son to the forest with the faith that he can find God and his heart will be pacified. That was her faith. A faith like that, if a parent has faith like that, you know, it seems a little too much and little, you know, for us to imagine, but if it's truly believed, that's what I go back to that, then a mother, a father who truly believes in God in the deepest sense, in the deepest way, for a child to be in that atmosphere growing up, it's very possible. It's very possible that they will have faith in God without even understanding that it's happening. Because if the parents are truly good and loving and serving God, then without a child even understanding what's happening, the child's getting faith in goodness. The child's getting faith in love, that it actually exists. Something's coming through the parents that's very sublime. Yeah, very true. So, you know, this is so Svayambhuva Manu, you know, he's such a good son too. We're also hearing about there's the duty of the parents and then there's the duty of the children. But because the children are tiny and vulnerable and small and completely dependent, it's kind of important this begins with the parents because they'll very much respond. Again, I'm simplifying things a little bit because then you know this child coming, whoever it is, they have their own background and karma and so forth. But still, we're hearing here about the duties of the child too. You know, this is very interesting, this verse. Because Prabhupada says, a son's duty is not only to make the father the source of supply for all his needs, but also when he is grown up to render service to him. It's interesting that he's calling this a duty to receive. It's a duty for the children to look to the parents and say, you are my source. I go to you for guidance. I go to you for what I need. And not go elsewhere. It's important that they go to the parents with that. And then the parents, because of that mood, Prabhupada says, if the son wants something and wants to be guided, the father will be 10 times more eager to give guidance, to give service. So if you have a little, it's Krishna's creation, these little babies are so cute, right? They come to you and they're starting to speak and they say, please help me with this, or what does this mean? Or what's this thing? And then the parents feel like inspired to give and share, to give knowledge, to give wisdom, to give help because of the need. No. But, you know, if a child is like, forget my parents, I go to my friends, I go here, and then the parents also will come back a little, withdraw. So it's the duty of the children to look to the parents as the authority, and it's the duty of the parents to also respond with this very difficult to manage mixture of firmness and love and affection. But still firmness and some discipline. It's very hard to strike that balance, right? I'm in the middle of it right now, a little baby boy. How much discipline? How many things should we say, you know, not allow? How many things should we? My wife is very good at this. But it has to be that balance because that's Krishna's creation, the mother and father. And sometimes the mother can be give a better discipline than the father, and vice versa. It's not always, you know, it's usually traditionally that the man is giving discipline, encouragement, he brings forth that strength, that guidance, and then the woman is very nurturing and loving and affectionate. But, you know, we're all a mixture of all these things. So things, parents get a mix of these, or sometimes it's reversed, right? Even Srila Prabhupada. He said that his father, he very fondly remembered his father on many occasions. He dedicated one of his most important books, Krishna book, to his father, Gaur Mohan Day. My father is a pure devotee. And he said, just like we were saying earlier, that the parents are meant to set up something that leads to the guru and leads to Krishna. So Prabhupada said, my father set this all in motion. He was a pure devotee. He was worshipping Radha Govinda. Prabhupada remembers as a baby even, hearing the bells, always hearing the bells. He said, my father had his work, but his real business was deity worship. And he would always, every day, he would invite sadhus. I heard every day from my spiritual master that heard that talking to people who, even in the family of Prabhupada, that every day Gaur Mohan Day would invite sadhus into the house and serve them prasad. Daily. Just imagine that. Come in, sit down. Let me cook some prasad, give to you. Now you please bless my son that he becomes a devotee of Srimati Radharani. That was Prabhupada's upbringing. And then, but he said his father would give whatever he wanted. Prabhupada had one gun, little toy gun. And he said, I have two hands, I want another gun. Mother said, that's crazy. No, you just be happy with what you... No, I want... And father gave in. Okay, give him two guns. He has two hands. The mother also said he should learn law. Prabhupada should learn law. Maybe in England. And father, I don't know. Let's teach him little mardanga. Father was very soft and giving very affectionate. Anything Prabhupada wanted, he said, my father gave. But my mother, she was a little more strong. And she would also, and that's also important. So, sublime relationship. And here, such a nice little section. There'll be more coming for these next couple verses, and you can listen. We know today this gets very complicated. These are very ideal examples of mother and father and children. But at least we have to make some kind of effort. For parents, they have to make some kind of effort with their children, and children with their parents, to at least come to some place of healing, if necessary, or respect or understanding for whatever may have happened. Because it is something, you know, again, it's something very sublime that if it gets purified and healed to some degree, it will help in our relationship with God. You know, it can help because there's powerful opportunities there with forgiveness and letting go of certain things and trying to make some changes, trying to heal some things. The heart gets a little bit purified and then it's more receptive to Krishna because that relationship is God's arrangement that you come into this world with two parents or hopefully two parents. That's why I said it's complicated now. That may not be the case, but still, healing is possible. Healing is always possible, no matter what, actually. But one needs some guidance, you know. Parents can sometimes, if mistakes are made with the raising of their children, they can go to their children when they get older and say, you know, I've made many mistakes, and I'm sorry for that. And I want to also make changes now. How can I best do that? I want to make some changes now. I want to try. I want at least that we have some mutual respect. I'm willing to try. You tell me also best way I can do that. A parent could say that to a child. And a child can also go to the parents and say, I'm sorry for resenting you that for the mistakes that you did make. Of course, I've also made mistakes. You know, so I'm sorry for resenting you. Because often things were done to the child, so the child's problem is resentment. Parents can also resent their children. It sounds crazy. Or be even envious or take out some revenge on the children, whatever it may be. This is now I'm bringing things to the modern context of parents and children relationship. So many things are possible. But it's definitely my conviction. And I'm with many, many, I've been with hundreds of people who were passing away. Hundreds of people who were passing away, right next to them while they were passing away. And on that journey, the last few weeks, the main thing that comes up again and again, and it also even prevents religious people from turning to God, is some problem in the family. And some people have had the courage to now let me face it before I die and have requested a little help and guidance in doing that, and have at least come to some place of forgiving, trying to forgive, trying to have respect, and then how that, I've seen how that's cleared the heart and then allowed for something deeper with God. So that's my personal experience. And so I think these conversations are good between coming, and you know, if you're a child and the problem was with the parents, it's going to be hard to approach. If it's the parents and you have some break with your children, that's also going to be very hard. But do we want to purify our hearts and take shelter of Krishna? You just go and do it. Just go and do it. Start it, and it could be very simple. I've made many mistakes. I'm sure I've hurt you in many ways. I've been reflecting on that. I want this relationship to at least be respectful. Maybe we still have our distance, but still respectful and understanding. So I hope now to adjust these things in my mind. I'm learning things much later. I was not a mature parent or whatever it may be. I'm just throwing in some words. Everyone has their own story and situation. But it's definitely worth it to bring this into our spiritual lives. Because this is Krishna's creation. The relation is sublime. It's meant to lead to something. So a sublime relationship gets very broken up. This is very common in this present moment. But there still can be powerful healing if we have the courage to approach. And we'll see, we can feel the letting go of resentment, which is completely preparing us for chanting the holy name, hearing Bhagavatam. You know, all these things are connected. There's just one life in a sense, there's just one life. We have material world, the spiritual world, the different planetary systems. But even what you do sometimes on a so-called material level, if it's preparing you, if it's part of that journey to Krishna, it's strange that we call it material. Huh? It's a little, if you think about it that way, as I'm here entangled in matter and with my material mind and psychology and experiences, let me push all that aside and love Krishna. But in a sense, you know, dealing with some of these things in the right spirit, in the right way, it's lifting you a little higher to where that's easier. By the power of a pure devotee, they can break through anything. So there's also mercy, great mercy that can descend on anybody. But I would say that is the more of an exception in the sense of a mercy that just takes somebody out of the material world with all these things that they're not dealing with and just gives them love of God. Lord Chaitanya did that sometimes. Certain personalities, just love of God, you have it. But for many of us, we want to seek that mercy and take shelter of our sadhana, our different practices, and also see what's happening in my life, because how I'm dealing with others is also revealing a lot of what's in my heart and what may be blocking my relationship with Krishna. So, Svayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa, the father and mother of mankind, they're guiding us by not just the teachings, but also their example in all their relationships were very beautiful and sublime. If you look at Svayambhuva Manu's relationships, we mentioned a few, always exemplary, always very high character, and also not just that, but he's a pure devotee. So we can follow his example here in this section. So we'll stop here. If there are any thoughts, comments, questions, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Anyone like to share anything or ask a question?
Very nice class. Thank you. I was reflecting in my own life. My best friend, I'm not putting anybody down. My best friend right now is my both sons.
Mm. Wow.
And one of them both is sons. The father of a son.
Mm.
Both sons. We are like the really the best friend.
Wow.
And as Prabhupada said, after 14, you treat them like a friend. Mm. We don't have any secret. I have a lot of things I did mistake.
Mm.
And I tell them honestly why I didn't know.
Mm.
And I was surprised how they really respect me more than before.
Mm.
And it's very thorough.
Mm.
If I have a transparent heart,
mm.
then I see that it affects them, mm. and they're very honest to me with their life.
Mm.
And one thing I introduce when they're 2 years old, like I would pray before they go to sleep.
Mm.
Till today, one son is 31, I still pray with him, even though he has his own son.
Yeah.
So I said, you have to adopt this. But in a loving way,
they
love to pray together. On Ekadashi day, we talk a few minutes.
Mm.
It's a very joyful journey.
Mm.
Very joyful journey, I would say. It's
wow.
very satisfying.
Yeah.
I don't mind to live with them billion years.
Wow.
Because they care for my spiritual life, and I care for their spiritual life. And I find like very emotional shelter, you know.
Mm.
I'm not putting anybody down or any sannyasi. I mean, I have a lot of nice devotees also, well-wisher. Yeah. But I see, practically in a family life, they can be the best emotional shelter you ever don't want to lose. I pray for them to Krishna also.
Mm.
And they also do. Very nice. My son even texts me, you are the best devotee of Krishna. Don't worry what you're going through. It's all will be okay because I'm praying for you too.
Wow.
That's very, you know, very humbling and also I reciprocate with that.
Mm.
Even little mistake happened on Ekadashi day. I said, you know, Prabhupada also did mistake. And I sent him the quote. Prabhupada broke one Ekadashi, I don't know if you know. And Bhakti Chara Maharaj gives that. And Bhakti Chara Maharaj was there.
Mm.
So Prabhupada said, well, we broke the Ekadashi. Let's do the Ekadashi tomorrow. Since we broke it, don't eat anymore, but we'll follow that tomorrow.
Mm.
So I did it for him also. Mm. I said, you do that tomorrow, and I'll also do for you, and I'll transfer my credit for you. Till today, he remembers.
Wow.
So it's very nice that spiritual-based, Krishna-conscious-based what Prabhupada gave, if we can really reciprocate with the family member, I find myself very happy, satisfied with that.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful, Prabhu. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, many of his followers, you know, some of, like, I think of two people, two Goswamis, actually, Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though they both wanted to join him, because when they were both young boys, you know, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Lord Chaitanya visited his home. He was a little boy. His father was Venkata Bhatta in South India. I went to this home where Lord Chaitanya went to the home of Venkata Bhatta. We were in that home for a little while just praying. But eventually, you know, when Lord Chaitanya was leaving, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, having been blessed by Lord Chaitanya, wanted to join him. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the instruction, actually, you serve your parents here for the rest of their lives. For the rest of their lives, you stay here and serve. Krishna will do everything. And just by doing that, following that instruction, serving his parents, he became one of the greatest scholars in Bhagavatam. He became completely absorbed in love for Krishna. And then at the end of their lives, the parents, then they sent him. Now you go to Lord Chaitanya for his shelter. And then going to Lord Chaitanya, then he sent them to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami in Vrindavan. But, you know, Lord Chaitanya, and also Raghunath Bhatta Goswami also, who served as a little boy, was massaging the feet of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya, he wanted to come. He came to Puri to be with Lord Chaitanya, was a menial servant, serving him, you know, massaging him. And Lord Chaitanya said, now you go back to your parents. Tapan Mishra. You go back to your parents, your mother and father. Serve them to the end of their lives. So, you know, it's this, when these are very, of course, these parents, they're very advanced devotees, but Lord Chaitanya also. So they're sometimes renouncing. And that's also there. Raghunath Das Goswami. Different. When he left his parents and came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, Lord Chaitanya said, Krishna has saved you from a pit. So you can't say one or the other, you know, it says, but we see that either way, if it's done in the right spirit, in the right mood, with the right blessings, then everything is fine. Yes, Mataji. Yes, true. Yes, true. Yes, Mataji.
Thank you for your lovely class. I had two questions. Being that this is Kali Yuga, and we have also heard Srila Prabhupada saying that these women in our movement are not ordinary women, can we extend that father and son relationship being sublime to father and daughter or mother and son in Kali Yuga, especially amongst the devotees?
Absolutely. You know, and the reason why I'm specifically sticking a little with father and son, only because it's in this verse. But, you know, we see that, the father alone is not Krishna's arrangement for that child, for the children. They get exactly what they need by this combination. And if you think about it, this is just the way of creation. There's Purusha and Prakriti. There's the glance of Mahavishnu into Prakriti. So this is father, mother, this is, you know, Krishna, Srimati Radharani. This is the ultimate reality. The ultimate reality is relationship. And there's male and female, and they're complementary. You know? So what a man can't do, a woman can do. What a woman can't do, a man can do. And if they work together in harmony in this way, so everything definitely applies to woman. You know, I heard some psychologist or something like that a while back. They said when a child is born without a mother, they're practically destroyed for life. Not always, because again, we know there's karmic background, but that is such a huge loss. Where they can without a father, it's also very, very bad. But a child can kind of find a father in other ways, you know, like even sometimes through, you know, some friends, which may not be good, but friends or somebody else kind of fills that position, and they kind of gets back on track. But without the mother at those early days and you know, weeks and months and years, then that child, and these are statistics, like psychological statistics, that person has a much harder time with just life and coping with life and depression and things like this and negative emotion. These are studies about this, so I'm not just speculating, actual statistical studies. If that is missing, then things are much, much harder. So almost like the mother, coming from the body of the mother, this is a very deep relationship. And so completely, yes, together they are sublime, you know, mother and father. So.
Thank you. And my second question was, you gave a definition of abracadabra. What language is that? Just curiosity.
I'm trying to... It may be. Yeah. I think you're right.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry, I don't remember, but I think they're right because I read that at some point. If you look it up, even if you just look it up, you'll see if you try to get the original meaning, it means my words will create the reality. Yes. Haribol. Yes, Mataji.
Thank you, Prabhu, for your very relevant class. One time I had heard, I guess it was, I don't know where I heard it from, psychologists or what, that the best gift a parent can give the child is love for their partner. Oftentimes I find often opportunities to point this out to a lady or a man, especially when I see them, cuddling their little infant or little dependent child, But the long run, will you love and care for the mother of that child? Or will you, will you continue to love and care for the father of that child so you can stay together?
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Certainly a child, this is their example right in their face. Every day, mother and father, how are they relating, right? Child doesn't use the intelligence to figure all these things, but feels the energy of it. Is there love? Is there affection? Feels that energy, and then it gives them a shelter, and then they trust that such things exist, and they're possible. And again, I want to say for people who have not had these situations that it may be very different from your situation that you're thinking about right now with your parents, but still 100% transformation and healing and all these things are still possible. You may need to go and get a little guidance on how that is so. You take shelter of a deep spiritual practice and the right people. And it's arranged also by Krishna that if that's not there, then still Narada Muni had no father around. But then these sages came and he saw them in, as shelter and did some service. Transformation, the spiritual energy can transform any material conditioning because it's of a higher level, a higher frequency. So it purifies the lower level. So just want to put that out there because who knows, we all have such different experiences when we talk about this. It's a controversial, not controversial, but it's a very loaded subject. So there's hope for all of us. Yes.
Anibal. Hi, Krishna. I just wanted to mention, you're mentioning about, according to statistics, it shows about that the growing up with the mother is more important or is very much. I was thinking you're talking about Swayambhuva Manu. And as far as I remember, even in the Manu Samhita, it describes the position of the mother as being far much greater than the father. Described that she is the first guru. Not, it describes specifically the mother being the first guru, and then her position being 1,000 times or something like that, 100 times, 100 times greater than the father. So all glories to the mothers.
All glories to the mothers.
And I just want to also thank you, Pran Govinda, for expressing his what he expressed. I really appreciated that.
Yes, thank very you. Much.
Thank you.
Yes, very touching. Please.
Just that I think we brought this up last time. This is, as your mother, I'm saying, to make your class a little shorter, because you bring up so many wonderful points, and then you see how the discussion is going on and on. But I have to go.
Thank you. So
please give us time to really churn all the nice points that you bring up.
Okay, thank you for your sharing that. I'll do my best. I get lost sometimes, and I always forget that point, but I try. But thank you for the reminder.
I mean, I don't want to pop the bubble here, you know, but nothing against mothers, but who are the four Kumaras' mother?
Well, in a sense, you can say they're all coming from Brahma right now, you know? They're just like manifesting from different, like the four Kumaras come from the mind of Lord Brahma. And it's described that Shatarupa and Swayambhuva Manu come from the body of Brahma. They expand from his body. So in this situation, we're talking about beings that are on a whole another, level. So as far as I know, the four Kumaras manifested from. But actually, they're in a Tapaloka. So it's even above Maharloka. They say that the Prajapatis and the Manus are in Maharloka. And the four Kumaras are in Tapaloka, which is above. So they're superior even to the Manus. Anyway, that's all I got for that one. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, jai.